Pull up a chair, the stories begin. Patrick and Randy are letting you in. From the desert lights where the big names are, it's Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Welcome to Big Conversations, Little Bar, the Coachella Valley's favorite podcast, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert. Get ready for another fascinating hour of meeting people who make the desert city such a spectacular place to be. Now, nestled in their corner booth perch, well lubricated and raring to chat, here's Patrick Evans and Randy Florence.
We are here back at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert, California, in the coveted corner booth, for another edition of Big Conversations, Little Bar. I'm Patrick Evans, and I'm joined, as I am each and every for the 120-plus episodes.
Wow.
My co-host, my spiritual advisor, my academic mentor.
Oh, God.
Wow. The mortgage broker to the stars, Randy Florence, is right here.
I am. Thank you.
You're welcome. I did a little bit of that because your wife's sitting over there.
That was actually pretty good.
Why don't you just call him the sunshine of your life?
He is the sunshine of my life.
I'm just so going to.
I can say that because my wife never listens to this
you're
podcast.
You're so deserving.
I'm just going to sit back.
But you're so deserving.
Yeah,
you're so deserving.
Thank you.
How are you, Randy? Everything's good?
I'm doing real. I wasn't really doing all that well until just that introduction.
I'm here to make you feel better about yourself.
I can leave now.
Well, you possibly.
Hey, but now that I'm on this surge of popularity.
Surge.
I turned on KSQ News the other morning, and it looked like there was an empty seat available for one of the anchors, and I'm just wondering if that job is available.
No. Angela's still very much with...
No. I was looking at an empty seat, and the news was on.
She was tardy for the opening of the weather segment. She just... But that's okay.
That's one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
Well... The funny part about that is so often when she walks into the studio, we pretend like we're on the air just to mess with her. And so this time around, we were actually on the air, and she was totally shocked. And we had to let her know we were being serious because she could easily have dropped an F-bomb because Angela has a mouth like a seven. I mean, it's just the truth. So,
well, then I can't do that job because I can't talk like that. What job? Like, calm down.
When did you stop? That must be new. All right. Well, why don't you do the honor of introducing our guests? Because you guys have known each other.
I'd love to. Well, we've met before.
Yes.
I don't even know how to start this introduction because this gentleman, Gary Levingston, does so many different things that we could literally do this podcast on each one of those things. But currently, I think most people in town would know you best for your most recent appearance on the Golden Bachelor. Bachelor in Paradise.
Yes, Bachelor in Paradise. Yes. That's correct.
So you were a contestant on the Golden Bachelorette.
Yes, that is correct. Last year. So now, new year, new show, Bachelor in Paradise.
And they brought some of the Goldens in.
Season 10. First time ever.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, so. I had you... You were talking about this, but you were... I think we're fairly restricted because the show was still being taped. But you were on Eye in the Desert talking about this.
That's right. That was prior to me going out for taping of Bachelor in Paradise.
Well, I want to go back to the Golden Bachelorette and talk about your experiences on that first. And then we'll jump into... I think it was very cool that they brought you... And they didn't bring everybody back.
You know, initially they rolled me out and Leslie as the Goldens that were going to be part of Paradise. They had never done that. And so I was humbled and honored to be that person or that guy from the Golden Bachelorette program that they were saying was going to Bachelor in Paradise.
So. When you were done with Golden Bachelorette, did you know that this opportunity might come again in the future?
I had no idea.
They didn't put that in the contract?
No idea. Yeah. No idea. And it's interesting because the transition happened earlier this year, around the January time frame, when they started leaking, are you interested? Would you come? We would love to. Let us tell you. And, you know, of course, my ear is on the tracks listening for, okay, this sounds like fun. Where are we going? And you can't say who else is coming, but you want me to be. I'm honored. I'm humbled. So it was.
And the first experience was good enough that the second one was interesting to you.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Let's talk about the first experience.
Okay.
Let's jump. I want to go back to how you were selected. Tell me about that. Walk me through the process.
It's an interesting process because I didn't pursue going on the show. In fact, I was greeting a church here at Southwest Church in Indian Wells, and the casting directors and her assistant came to our church. And I noticed they were new, and I escorted them to their seats, and they handed me this application for the Golden Bachelorette, and I'm like, what's this?
What the heck is this? Not something you get at church every Sunday.
It's supposed to be an envelope with money.
I'm just trying to find some good seats for you guys and find out a little bit about why you're here and where you're from and, you know, all the things.
And was that totally random or had they scouted? Like, you don't know.
Didn't ask why. You know, it's like, why ask why? And I said, no, that's not for me. I'm too private of a person. I can't do that. And what happened is, over the course of the next 2 to 3 months, we befriended each other. And I found out that her mom had passed away and she recently moved to the Valley and her daughter was here who was expecting. And so I pulled her in and I said, we have this women's ministry. You can come and be part of this. You can go and do that. And we just became friends. And then there was a casting call at the River. And I said, let me go and support. I'm just going to support. Right. And I looked at some of the guys that were going up there and I'm like, oh, this is not going too good. This doesn't look good.
I better jump in and save this.
This guy was from the local bar here. He said he did this, he did that. And I'm thinking, this is not good.
It wasn't one of my finer moments.
Yeah, she looks over at me. She's, just fill out the little card, Gary. Just fill it out. I'm like, okay, let me fill this thing out to help you. And I got on the stage, and then it started to rain. And it was the funniest thing because the next day I get a call. You're number one in the running, and we got to get you ready. And the executive producer wants to talk to you. And let's get the lighting and make sure the camera is good. And I'm sitting there in my home, and I'm like, wow, what's going on?
What is all this?
You're the guy. You're the guy. You're that guy, and we really like you. And so that's how it all started. And lo and behold, one thing led to another, and I ended up on the show.
Holy cow.
And I would have never thought in a million years because of how private I really am. And, you know, I didn't want my life to be an open book. But after speaking with our pastor, Pastor Ricky Jenkins, and some of the other guys at church, the main focus was for me to just continue to be me.
Yeah.
Just be you. Be the godly and Christ-like man that you are. And just be you. And that's what I walked in with that level of confidence saying, it'll be fine. It'll be a great journey and experience. And lo and behold, look at what happened. Wow. So that's how it all started.
So when you start on the show, did they give you any kind of an indication? Here's what's going to take place. Here's the first episode. Here's what you're going to be doing, or is it just kind of organically grows through the season?
It's organic, and you know, initially we were sequestered in a separate hotel from the mansion. And that was prepping and getting everything ready mentally as I'm there with no cell phone, no anything. And I'm reading. Now, the cool part is...
Refresh my memory. Where was the mansion?
In Malibu.
In Malibu, that's right.
Yeah. So now, the cool part is the men from my church gave me a little book. And all of them had written their... you know, prayers for me and words of inspiration and motivation and all that. It's all I had. And once we went to the mansion, that first rose ceremony was like, I've got to get a rose. You know, I'm here. I can't just, after all this that I've gone through, the blood tests and the background investigation and looking into your finances, and you're not a criminal.
Blood test? Wait, there's a blood test?
Yeah, they have to make sure that you're healthy and that there's no diseases and all. And I'm thinking, what am I doing here? This is more than I bargained, but yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah, because right then point, I'm like, I'm out.
No, but you know, look,
you want to tell us summary?
You like, want to prove to the world and yourself, I'm a good guy. I can, you know, I don't. There's nothing wrong. I can get through this. I'm, you know, I got a good background. I've graduated from college. I went to SC and all these things, and so you want to get over those hurdles. And then you get to the mansion, and there's the rose ceremony. There's 24 men.
And are you checking out these other men? And you're going, well, I'm better looking than him.
I'm not checking out the other guys. I am just in awe that I'm even there.
How the heck did this happen?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, my wife is a big fan of The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, and she watches all of them. Like, it's the one thing on TV that she really... likes to watch.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And so I've watched a bit, especially I think maybe the Golden Bachelor was a little bit different, but yes. You know these shows. Now you're a guy. You found the show by being at church, and you're a church going.
Go figure.
I mean, like a lot of the show is not done in church.
No,
I mean, it's like
I've seen a lot very, of it's in a hot tub. Very few roses given out at church.
the old shows, the older ones.
Yeah,
but this was the first year that they actually had the Golden Bachelorette.
Right. Yeah,
the year prior they had the Golden Bachelor.
Right.
Of 60 and over, letting the world know, hey, just because we're golden. I won't say we're seniors. We're golden. We're in our golden years. And so we still have a life. We're still searching and looking for love. Some of the men's...
Not all of us. Not all of us. My wife's sitting over there. I just needed to make sure I mention that.
That's good. That's
and
good.
And so, you know, what a great theme and concept that they came up with to put into the marketplace.
But when, you know, when you were approached, I mean, obviously you had to know what the previous shows were like. I mean, they a little bit kind of runs counter to Christian values. I don't know any way to say it.
Well,
I mean, like there's
it's not Love Island.
Well, but okay. Well, it's not Love Island, but I mean, so, but you know, there's
so Patrick, let me share this. I didn't have anything to go on other than the younger kids.
Right.
And those shows, right? The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. And I'm looking at these shows because I never watch reality TV. I'm watching sports or I'm watching the news. Those are my two go-tos outside of my, you know, extracurricular activities, which is most at church. And I'm like, is this what I'm getting ready to go and do? Really? Seriously? But it changed once we got there. And once I got a rose and the guys, it was like we had joined a fraternity. It was like this exclusive club. And we were now in the fraternity. You know, we went through Rush Week. We went through Pledge Week. We went through all the things that they could do. And then you got the rose and you're in. Some guys didn't make the cut.
How many of the 24 got roses?
I think 16.
Okay.
Yeah, 16.
Wow, that's a big cut.
I think that's right.
Wow. Okay.
It's a big cut.
So that moment still had to be incredibly exciting and kind of like, now where are we going next?
It was beyond exciting. And in the mansion, we had to share rooms. So...
You probably haven't had a roommate in a while.
It's been a few years. I'm in a bunk bed. I'm in a lower bunk.
That's an adjustment in and of itself.
There was Chalk and Michael. Chalk is who ended up with Joan. There's Chalk and Michael, and then there was Guy. He was a runner-up. And myself and Charles Ling we were the five guys in our room. And then they had other guys in the other rooms. I'm telling you, it was like a fraternity house.
And there's not a lot of bunk beds in Malibu.
Right.
They had to go to IKEA to put everything together
in a mansion at that. Yeah, right? You're in a mansion you're in a bunk bed.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah.
Really surprised. A lot of bunk beds.
I haven't been in a lot of mansions.
So, yeah. It was great. It really was. And the beauty is that we all accepted what was being presented to us.
Are you guys still in touch?
You should see my phone blowing up today. Yeah.
Oh, they heard you were going to be on the podcast.
Well, everybody has their thing. They knew I was. Some of them knew, but we are all in touch. We just had a 1-year celebration and get together in Las Vegas last month. I couldn't go because I was in Africa on a mission trip. But yeah, we're in touch. We're brothers forever. We're part of this exclusive club now that nobody can ever take that away from us. You know, and what a wonderful thing that I now call these guys my GBS1 brothers, Golden Bachelorette Season 1 brothers.
It's got to be obviously an incredible bonding experience, but you're also you're in fevered competition as well. So it's like it's there's a dichotomy there. Like you love the guys, but you want to beat them.
Interesting. There was no competition.
No.
I was rooting for Guy. Guy was rooting for Chalk. Chalk is rooting for Mark. Mark is rooting for me. And Charles is rooting for...
Okay.
Is that different with the Goldens than it is with the younger ones? The younger ones don't look like they're rooting for each other.
I think it's quite different where we, in our experience, were really rooting... Truly, we were rooting for each other. Yeah. Now, when he came back from his date, it's like, what happened? What's going on? Is she this? She that? She's... You know, she's intelligent, she's beautiful, she's smart. Oh my God, I was so nervous. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. But it was an amazing experience because it turned into a bromance. When we weren't on the date, we were all connecting on a whole nother level of not having phones, not having any technology. Wow. So we had to talk to each other like we did when we were growing up, right? As Goldens, we didn't have phones. We didn't have like things technologically that would pull us away from engaging in conversation. And we connected in the most amazing way.
What a very cool
experience. That's amazing.
Yeah, it really
was. Now, and we were talking about how, you know, amazing that moment was when you got the rose. But there comes that moment where you didn't. So walk us through that, because I mean,
who'd you have to knock out?
But you know, you've gotten very close to all of these guys, and you know, you wanted to be a part of this program, and then you have to go. That had been kind of heartbreaking.
Well, I made it. Every rose ceremony was just very stressful,
nerve-wracking. Sure.
It was nerve-wracking. It's like,
I mean, it's nerve-wracking when you watch them on television.
Oh my god! If you're there, and CK and I, the first night, we're sitting there and we're talking, and he says, "I'm not gonna go through this. I'm not used to somebody picking me. This is crazy. I can't believe we're doing this." And him and I both got through that first rose ceremony. And it was like, oh my god. God, can you believe that? We made it.
This is the greatest thing ever.
So I made it to the top 7, right? And I don't know how, because Joan and I are just really good friends, and we connected on that level, not on a romantic level, but just good friends. And the night I didn't get a rose, I was ready to come home. Uh-huh. I was really ready to say, I want to go home. I'm tired. I can't keep doing this, because at every rose ceremony, you've got to pack all your bags.
Oh, because that might be it.
You don't know if you're staying or if you're going.
Oh my gosh.
And so every rose ceremony,
psychological torture.
Let me tell you, I'm the most complete backpacker now in the world. If I gotta leave in 24 hours,
I got a to-go bag.
If I gotta leave
in
30 minutes, I know how to pack my luggage with 2 weeks of clothes that I packed. So yeah, it's very stressful in that way. And I left, and I was happy to go, because it was just time. But then when I got home, something changed because I wasn't in the same lane I was in when I left. And I came back, and thank God that we have a psychologist that we can talk to. I didn't even want to pick up my phone because I knew what was on the other side of that, with people reaching out and calling and the messages and all the things.
Was it overwhelming?
It was. This was overwhelming.
Yeah.
This was overwhelming. And then realizing I couldn't really talk much about the experience that I had just gone through.
Right.
So I was left with, let me just try to figure out how I fit back into society. Wow. And it was...
how long did this process take from beginning to the time you left the show?
Let me see. So I would say probably a good couple of months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I have a question. You say that you and Joan ended up just being very good friends.
Yes.
Not really. But at the very beginning, you didn't know it was going to be like that. Were you hopeful that there might be a romantic spark?
Patrick, really? You had to ask me that.
We're good friends. We ask tough questions.
We're good friends.
Okay.
From the beginning,
I mean, before you got to know her,
to be a romantic thing, that was the whole purpose of going on the trip.
Right.
But, you know, you realize and say, you know, you're a beautiful woman and I'm very happy for you. And then things start happening. Like she told us her mom wasn't doing well. And I wrote her mom a prayer. And I was shocked that they aired that.
Mm.
I said, can I pray for your mom? What's her name? And I don't think she expected that. Well, I was shocked that they even aired that.
Yeah.
But it was very genuine with what I was saying. And I was honestly concerned about her mom's well-being, who's in her 90s. And so we were close in that way, as opposed to me asking for her hand in marriage. I'll say that.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
You said... I'm just taking a short break. He'll come back to that in a moment.
I respect the answer I got.
Well, then I'll ask it a different way.
Okay, would you?
Oh, my God.
You said when you first went onto the show, your main goal was that you wanted to stay true to yourself.
Yes.
You wanted to stay vulnerable.
Yes.
Did you accomplish that?
Totally. Totally. And I did because I felt safe. We all did. And I think that's why we all were vulnerable, because we all felt safe in the environment we were in, because we were on lockdown.
Yeah, you guys were sequestered.
We were sequestered. It was just us. And so, yeah, we felt safe in that way because we all had just gone through the same thing. We all went through the background check. We all did and had gone through that pledge process, I'll say, for lack of a better term. And it was special. It really was.
So people might be surprised to know you had a life before the Golden Bachelor. Golden Bachelorette.
Oh, really? You're kidding me.
First of all, you have a very famous godmother.
Yes.
Who is that?
Tina Turner.
Tina Turner.
Yes.
So talk about that, growing up with Tina Turner as your godmother, and how that might have informed some of who you became as a performer.
Well, I'm not a performer.
Okay.
I'm just Gary.
So it didn't inform any of that.
And I think what I got from Gary saying
he's a pretty good performer.
Yeah.
Pretty good dancer. What I got from her really was, she'd always give me books to read, right? And one that I recall more than any other was The Power of the Subconscious Mind. And she was always talking about how powerful we are spiritually. She was into Buddhism. I tried it. It's not my thing. And I landed in Christianity, but even the power of prayer is a huge, huge thing.
Yeah.
But more importantly, what I found was the entertainer that she was, truly the entertainer, not just the singer, complete artist of entertainment, at home, very private, quiet, small gatherings, conservative, not the person on stage. And so what I gathered from that was, I'm a very private person also. I like the quiet time. I like the privacy of my world. But when the lights and camera go on, I can still be me, just in a different form. Does that make
sense? Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes
and
perfect
so,
sense.
So, you know, and you may experience this with going behind the camera. You're just doing your job. Outside of that, you're a very different guy. You like to cook, and I've seen you behind the stove and doing all the wonderful meals that he prepares.
He likes
I'm looking
to eat
forward
too.
To that, by the way.
Well, we can arrange it. Yeah, I mean, there's, I think anybody who has a public job,
yeah,
there is that public persona, but you remain a private person, and you like to keep some of those things just to yourself.
Yes.
I think the most important thing, and it sounds like that you walk this fine line, you're not performing per se. You are being yourself, and you're being authentic. Yeah. And I think that's what people are really drawn to.
Yeah.
When you're watching a program like The Golden Bachelorette,
yeah,
or any program, you want people to be their authentic selves.
Sure, sure, absolutely.
For somebody who is so private,
yeah,
does it seem weird to open up People magazine and read about yourself?
Not only People magazine.
Anything.
I open my email and it's like, Google, Gary Levingston. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. So, no, it is really weird. Getting used to the celebrity side. But again, with what I gathered from Tina, my godmother, and how she handled things, I'm able to separate the two.
Mm.
And not take it too seriously. It's fun.
Well, I think you're very lucky to have had that experience in
I
your
agree.
Life. Because I think some people who suddenly find themselves in a spotlight,
yeah,
may just have no idea how to handle it.
Yeah, yeah. Which is why there's a psychologist that we have access to help us along the way. That journey, it's a powerful thing. The transition from, you know, I go to IW Coffee now. Can we take a picture? Is that okay? I'm sorry to interrupt. And absolutely, you know, it's a fun thing, but I keep it in perspective.
Well, listen, after your appearance on this podcast,
yeah,
I don't think
you are not
going to
be able to get a cup of coffee in this town, Gary.
Yeah.
No way, man. No way. Those days are over.
IW might ask
over.
You not
oh
to come
my
in.
God.
It'd be too disruptive.
Satellite trucks that will just...
Thanks, Randy.
Sorry we did that to you, Gary.
Reminding me of what...
TMZ is going to be camped out in front of your house.
By the way, that's an interesting thing.
Ooh.
So...
TMZ?
Just a couple weeks back, before I went to Tahoe, someone left a rose on my front door, and it was a fan. And I see my camera of this person, and I'm like, what's going on? And they left the rose. They didn't ring the bell or anything, with a little card. And I see this car pull up, and they ran out, jumped in the car, and they left. Now,
that freaked me out.
I didn't know that I was like celebrity like that. But it's scary in one sense. It's flattering in another. But it's also, to me, I'm like, wow, this thing is real.
Yeah.
And it didn't just get real. That was something that was quite impactful to have that happen.
Yeah. It's got to be kind of an out-of-body experience to realize that's happening to you.
It was a real, yeah, transition of this is real. And now I, when I leave home, I'm looking around. I'm
like, who's waiting for me out here?
Yeah, I'm checking all sides.
You had no idea, but the good folks behind the program decided to call you back and have you participate in another season with some of the younger folks.
Yeah.
So tell us about that, because that has to be a whole different kind of vibe than the show that you originally did.
It really was. But the beauty of that show is, you know, you get to travel to Costa Rica. Beautiful. Absolutely just paradise. And the theme of that show, again, I hadn't known anything about Bachelor in Paradise. They didn't film for 2 years. And bringing the Goldens back onto the program, a lot of the fan base from Bachelor Nation was like,
I'm not going to like it. All these old people on the beach. And you got to be kidding me. And they're mixing with the younger kids. They better not cross generational lines and date the young kids. And, you know, these guys are probably going to be looking at the younger girls. And the girls are going to be...
pedophiles.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to all this and I'm saying, holy cow, this is what I'm getting ready to walk into. But knowing the men from the Golden Bachelorette, I knew that we were brothers, right? And I knew that it was going to be very respectful because we carry that with us. And there was nothing to be worried about as far as, you know, hey, I like Bailey over here because she's only 22 years old. Look at that body.
So what?
You guys would have a lot in common.
What is your relationship with Leslie?
Well, it's funny you mention that. Leslie and I are really good friends. And let me kind of set the stage. So her and I were rolled out as the Goldens that were going to be in Paradise. At Grant's final rose ceremony that was last just this past spring. And we didn't really know each other prior to going on the show. But as we got closer to traveling, you know, we texted, oh my God, this is going to be so much fun and looking forward to it. And we started hearing about the other folks that were going. Not that I knew any of the Golden Bachelorettes, but I knew the Golden men that were going. And then once we got there, and then I got the first date card, which was for dancing, and I got a chance to talk to Natasha and Leslie, and who else was there at the time? And I think Kathy was there, and I chose Leslie. Oh, April was there also. April. I won't forget about April. I didn't forget April. She's an amazing woman. And so we went on the first date dancing, and it was salsa dancing. And how much fun is that?
And you're a dancer.
And we both are. Yeah. Leslie has a dancing class that she does, and she does a Pilates class. And so I thought, you know, what a great opportunity for me to take you on this date, because we were the ones that were selecting the roses, or we were picking that night. The men were, and I thought, wow, now I get to, instead of getting one handed, I get to decide who I'm going to give the rose to. I'm feeling pretty good about tonight because I don't have to worry about getting a rose, right? And it was great salsa dancing. It started to rain. We're dancing in the rain. It was just one of those. It was so amazing. And we got to know each other in that way, and it just was truly special. And yeah, so her and I connected on that level. And interestingly enough, wait a minute, I'm going to back up. So the women were given the roses the first series, and Natasha gave me her rose, and Leslie wanted to give me her rose, but because Natasha went in front of her, she's like, really? You just took...
usurped my bachelor dude.
Right. And of course, I'm not
going to... bachelor dude. That's next year's
and
show.
And I'm not going to say no because I want a rose, right?
Right, right.
I don't know what Leslie's doing.
You can't
Natasha,
say no.
You're giving me a rose? I'm in. I accept your rose. And it was interesting because, you know, the ball started rolling. And then April gave her rose to Jonathan, one of the younger guys. Well, that eliminated three of the Golden men that night.
Oh, that's right.
So there were three Golden Bachelor men and six Golden Bachelorette women.
Well, the odds were good.
That's a pretty good number for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I can only take one.
Oh, okay.
I got six.
I'm already rewriting the script.
I'm not taking six different ones.
I can't afford that many roses.
Randy, come on, man. Come on. Oh my,
do you know what the price of roses are?
Yeah, nor would you want to. Trust me. So, Leslie and I are really good friends, and we stay in touch. She's in Minneapolis. We talk on a regular basis, and we wish that each other finds love, and we're really good friends. We're really good friends.
Thank you for that.
After these experiences, and more than just people coming up and putting a rose on your doorstep, how has life changed for you? Because it's obviously had to open up opportunities, and I know that you're doing some different work now. Tell us, how you can utilize these experiences.
Sure. So my platform now is one that I, 2 years ago, I wasn't on Facebook or Instagram or any of those social media platforms. But I wanted to utilize what I do have now in the best possible way I can. Well, Talkspace reached out to me. And they are a mental health organization with hundreds of thousands of people that have access to consultants, counselors, and doctors they can talk with about their mental health, whether it was something from 20 years ago, 2 years ago, or 2 days ago. And I thought, what a great opportunity for me to go and continue to inspire and motivate and speak about mental health in our golden years that we have to deal with. We're drinking more water, we're working out, we're walking, we're doing all the things. I never saw my grandfather on a bike.
Mm.
I never saw my grandfather exercise. But we are not our grandfather's grandfather. I have a 6-year-old grandson now. I'm very active. But what about my mental health and what am I doing for that? So they brought me in as a senior advisor. Senior advisor.
Golden advisor.
Our first senior advisor. And so, I'm doing that. And then Tommy Bahama reached out to me as an influencer for them. And how ironic, that was after the Golden Bachelorette. And here it is, I'm getting ready to go to paradise. Guess what, Patrick? I'm Tommy Bahama down.
Nice. That's a good deal.
That's awesome.
That's worth it right there.
I don't know how that worked out, but it did, to the point where I was ready for paradise with my attire and my gear.
That's phenomenal.
So that was fun doing that. And so those are the two that I've recently been pulled into to support.
How long have you been in the Valley?
It's been 10 years now.
From where?
From Sherman Oaks.
Okay.
Yeah, and you were doing finance work in Sherman Oaks?
I was doing short documentary filmmaking, went back to film school, but prior to that, corporate finance with Southern Cal Edison and Northrop Grumman Defense Contractor.
Wow.
I got a chance to see Gary's film. It's pretty cool.
Do you like that?
That is really cool.
That's Jesse Belvin that we talked about.
That's right.
Yeah, looking at making it into a feature film or a stage production. Yeah.
Tell people about it, because we talked a little bit before we actually started rolling. So
Jesse Belvin was a singer-songwriter from the 1950s, and his hustle was selling his songs to the record industry, and these were blockbuster songs, and they were giving him $300-$500 for these songs. Meanwhile, Sinatra, the Rat Pack, these guys in Los Angeles were going over and getting his music and turning him into these big, big hits. And his wife that he married said, look, I'm expecting, we can't continue to live like this. And she got him a contract with RCA Victor Records, equaled that of Elvis Presley at the time. And they started writing, and he was singing, and was part of the inaugural Grammys in 1959 for Best Male Vocal and Best R&B Performer for his song, not Goodnight, My Love. Oh, my God. Why am I right when I need the song? I can't think of it. But anyway, and then he went and did a show down in Arkansas, the first integrated show with him and Jackie Wilson, a couple other artists. And the Klan came because it was the first interracial show. They busted up the place. The cops were there to protect everybody, but they just stood by. And they cut the brake lines on his car. And him and his wife, who he was traveling with, and their driver, had a head-on collision. And he died in 1960, a year after his big contract with RCA Victor.
Oh, my gosh.
So, an amazing story that needs to be told globally. It's a good story.
Yep. How did you come?
This was your documentary.
Yes. One of three that I did while in film school. Yeah.
And how did you find that story originally?
He's my uncle, Jesse Belvin.
Wow. Okay.
Right? So,
wow.
What an honor for me to do that for my family. And now to continue to see how we can get this as a feature film. And it's pretty amazing. It really is, the steps I'm taking to make that now a dream for my family.
And you're running your own production company now, right?
Yes.
Yep. What's that called?
Gary Levingston Productions LLC.
Well, that worked out good.
Yeah, that's a
what a coincidence.
It's easy for him to remember in business meetings.
Yeah. Yeah. What's your name?
So. But when you were working in the world of corporate finance and doing that, what made you decide that you wanted to go to film school? I mean, a lot of people wouldn't even imagine doing that.
Growing up in an environment where entertainment was part of my background.
Yeah, it's built into your DNA for sure.
You don't realize, you know, you have a drive for that world. But me trying to figure out in front of the camera, behind the camera, I want to do something for me. I'm tired of working for someone else, telling me what to do, when to do it, where to do it, why I'm doing it, who to do it with. That's a corporate environment, right? I'm moving up the chain really well. I'm at the executive level, but I wasn't finding happiness with myself doing that. And I said, I'm going to go back to film school. And I'm going to make a film. And I'm going to make numerous films. And this is the route I want to take. And became an entrepreneur doing that. And traveled globally with the film festivals. The whole nine yards.
What were the other? You said you did three.
Only Light was another one. And that was about sex trafficking. Which was something very big. It still is. And Saddles was another film. It was about... a little girl and her horse, and they lost the farm, and she had to give the horse up. And so it was a very personal story with having to give something up that you grew up with as a child, and how that's impacting the family dynamic. So those were the three I did in film school. And then the stage production I did was... for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow is enough, a Tyler Perry film, but also Intozaki Shange, who wrote that production. It was a Tony-nominated Broadway stage production. And my production got 5 nominations at the NAACP Theater Awards with 2... victories for Best Actress and Best Supporting Actress.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Right?
So, now what? Are there more Bachelor shows coming up? Or what's next?
I don't know that I could do another Bachelor show, man. That's a lot. I guess it would just depend, but, you know, I'm still looking for love. I'm still looking for my other half. I'm looking for a wife. I don't want to date or have a girlfriend. Not at my age. I'm looking for partnership. And so that's where I'm at. And that's what I'm focusing on and being involved in my church
and all that fun stuff, the men's ministry and doing what I can to inspire and now motivate other men.
Well, you've got a bigger than life personality, so I'm not surprised at all that they picked up on you.
Thank you. In a good way.
In a good way, definitely.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. And obviously, you want to be continue working to translate your documentary to a full length feature film.
Feature film, yeah.
So that's got to be an interesting task.
It really is. So stay close, because
now who would you pick to play your uncle?
I'm glad you asked. I'm putting this out there. Bruno Mars, if you're watching.
Yeah.
What a great opportunity. You have not done a feature film, but I know that you are someone who fits that role big time. So Bruno Mars,
he's a big listener.
I'm sure he subscribes. That would be very cool.
Yeah. I'm aiming for the stars, and he's one I think that would, I pray he'd love to do this part. Well,
it's a compelling story. I mean, it's got the elements of success and tragedy.
Totally.
I can see why you latched on. I mean, obviously,
I'll send you a copy so you can look at it and say, wow, that is pretty powerful stuff.
Oh, I'd love that.
So I need your support, Patrick.
I'm all in.
Okay.
I'm all in.
All right.
No, I mean, also the fact that you know, you're telling a very personal family story, that this man was your uncle and this was, you know. And also the dealing with the issues of exploiting black artists who are writing great music, and white artists are taking that music and having great success.
And that was very real.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And we all know that. This is just one of those where Jesse could write a song. It's like going to a field of corn, and he's just pulling off one ear of corn, and here you go. Okay, here's $500. He's got this field of songs that he's written that are just waiting to be blockbuster, you know, songs. Yeah.
Well, I really want
to
see this.
And I'll let you guys listen to some of his music after, so you can say, oh, my God, he wrote that? He sang that? He wrote that? Amazing.
Wow. It's amazing. Well, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Not a bad show, huh?
Anytime you can get, I mean, the experiences that Gary has had, but also, you know, I really appreciate you talking about your experience with the church I think it's good for people to hear. You know, they see you on TV and in these, you know, kind of crazy reality shows, but you're a very grounded person. You come from a very centered place in life, and that I think is very important.
And the work you're doing with the mental health stuff, that is so important right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I'm looking at getting involved with children of the Coachella Valley. The Friends of the Children of the Coachella Valley.
Yes.
As another segue to help that next generation of kids that we need to stay in front of, to give them the things they need for their success.
Well,
for us.
Yeah. I'm thrilled to be a part of that organization. And in this valley, I can't think of anything more important.
Yeah.
Well, I love that you've taken the spotlight and you're leveraging it to do something great for the community. And
absolutely.
That's terrific. Absolutely. Gary, thank you so much.
Patrick, thanks.
Randy wonderful really cool. job.
Not bad, huh?
Yeah.
We made it through another week.
Mr. McMullen, John, great work.
Thanks, John.
America's peppiest producer, John McMullen. And today we had a studio audience. Thank you all, ladies.
Thank you, ladies, for being here.
All right, that wraps up this edition of Big Conversations Little Bar. On behalf of our guest, Gary, my co-host, Randy, thank you, buddy.
Glad to be here.
John McMullen, thank you all very much. By the way, we should have mentioned this earlier, but a recent online site called millionpodcasts.org has ranked Big Conversations Little Bar the number one most influential podcast in the Coachella Valley.
And that's second website to say that about.
How about that?
Yeah. So awesome. We want you to subscribe so you never miss an episode of Big Conversations Little Bar. I'm Patrick Evans. Thanks for joining us.
Amen.
Big Conversations
Big Conversations, Little Bar is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. This podcast is available in audio and video format. Visit our website at www.bigconversationslittlebar.com. New episodes are released every Monday.
Athletes and dreamers, stars of the screen, leaders and builders, and all. Little bar at big conversations, little